Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast him during the weekend and also after our noon news hour, so I can get that out. Well, we'll just go right to right now to Arthur. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Well, I have to say that I am well prepared for the bad weather, and it was a lot of fun going to Whole Foods yesterday morning and stocking up. It's my new candy store, Marshall. I don't know. Where's the closest Whole Foods to Sharon?
There is no close Whole Foods.
There is no close. Well, I would lobby to get one.
I was
totally anti Whole Foods until Amazon bought it. Until Bezos bought it.
Jeff Bezos. But I think the closest one is in Danbury. I think.
Well, you know what? It's worth a trip because I have one nearby, so I can say that. But because it's only 5 minutes away, I do have to get in the car. But in fact, I don't usually shop at Whole Foods. But when all the snow and ice started, and I needed to go shopping, I said, you know, let's go to Whole Foods because they have a great parking lot. So they even have heaters over the parking spaces. So on a freezing day, they plow it. They must plow it twice a day even. I don't know. But I've been there several times lately, and the lot has no snow on it at all. But in any case, it's a great parking lot. So we go, and I am astounded at how cheap things are. A lot of things were less than in my ordinary supermarket. And in particular, produce. Not in particular, but the things that I buy. Produce, meaning fruit and vegetables, fish, and meat. And then I barely go into the middle of the store, you know, where the grocery items are, because they have all... the other day I bought Whole Foods brand mayonnaise, and I don't like it. So, I mean, I don't like it as well as I like Hellman's. So, you can't get, like, your mainstream items like Hellman's mayonnaise. But the other day, I discovered sable fish. Do you remember sable, Marshall?
I do now. You know, when I saw what we were going to talk
because
about.
Because Jews remember sable.
Yeah. I remember it from when I was younger, yes.
Yes, exactly. It was one of the smoked fish we got at the appetizing store, what we called the appetizing store. By the way, if you go online and do some reading about this, you're going to find that there are a lot of non-Jews who refer to the store selling these items, fish items, as a deli, but it's not a deli item. Sable fish is not a deli item. It is an appetizing store item. It's a smoked fish. And, you know, it's in the same case next door to the herrings and to the smoked salmon and blah, blah. So pickled lox, which I've been craving lately, I might make some. I used to make it myself. I might make it. Anyway, and by the way, you do use lox and not smoked salmon for that. So I go to Whole Foods, and they have sable fish, and it is super cheap for fish. I mean, it was $12. It was $13 a pound, whereas swordfish is $20 a pound. Tuna is $25 a pound. Chilean sea bass, which we love, a oily, flaky, silky-fleshed fish, is $30 a pound. And there's this sable fish. Now, I knew that it was also called black cod, but I'm still confused. So they also had sable fish. It was funny. They have sable fish fillets, and they have whole sable fish, and the whole sable fish were only $10 a pound. And by the way, at Whole Foods, they have very well-trained clerks behind the fish counter who will, if you want, you can buy a whole fish and have them fillet it. I'm not sure if I want to use sable fish head and bones to make a broth, but that would be one reason if you like fillets but you want to get a whole fish, which you can always be assured is fresh by looking into its eyes, and if they're clear and not all fogged up, it's a pretty fresh fish. Anyway, back to sablefish. So it's also known as black cod. And I think most Americans these days know it as black cod. It actually was black cod officially until 1916, when the Bureau of Fisheries and whatever decided that for marketing purposes, they were going to rename it, because it's not at all a cod. It's not at all in the cod family, and to call it black cod was quite confusing. So they decided, well, a man named Cobb, with a B, two B's actually, wrote about this in Pacific Fishing Magazine, whatever it was called. But by the way, it is a northern Pacific fish. It's in the same water as cod and also salmon. However, anyway, back to, so 1916, they officially changed the name to sablefish. Of course, sable, the fur, was very popular for very rich people. So it sounded like a deluxe item, sablefish. And in fact, it had been coming up all the time when they were fishing for other things up in the northern Pacific, but nobody was buying it, and it was very cheap. And the idea was they were going to make it available to people with no money, because they could afford to eat this, what was then considered sort of a trash fish. And I was surprised at how inexpensive it was, given the quality of fish it is. And also because growing up eating smoked sable from the appetizing store, that was very expensive. That was as expensive as smoked salmon, as Nova smoked salmon. So I always thought of it actually as a luxurious item. But anyway, the sable fish, what do you do with it? I don't know. The famous, famous, famous recipe is from Nobu, the Japanese restaurant, originally in California, but made most famous in Soho, who's at Tribeca, downtown Manhattan. And in fact, and there are Nobus all over the world now. In fact, I went on a cruise some years ago where one of the optional restaurants was a Nobu, and I had a laugh. A lot of people went to the Nobu sushi bar for their appetizer. then they went to the dining room. In any case, Nobu Matsuhitsu, I think is his last name, didn't create the famous black cod dish that he serves. It's actually a traditional Japanese preparation, but he unquestionably popularized it. He may have even refined it a little bit. And you can go online and find Nobu's black cod. You make a marinade of mirin, which is a rice wine, to oversimplify, slightly sweet. If you don't want to buy a bottle of mirin, or you can't buy a bottle of mirin, although you can get anything online these days, you can substitute sherry. I would say sherry is probably the best substitute. It doesn't have to be a dry, dry in fact, I wouldn't use a fino sherry. I would use amontillado, or, you know, one of the ever so slightly sweet sherries. But even dry sherry is good. It's mirin, sake. Now, I know nothing about sake, and I don't even know which one to recommend if you're making a marinade for fish. I would think a dry one. But, you know, this has a sweet element to it. In fact, the next ingredient is sugar, which is why I'm not making this tomorrow, although I'm very curious. And what else is in there? And important, miso. And you put those ingredients all together, you bring it to a simmer, and then you let it cool, and then you marinate the fish for a couple of 3 days. And then you grill the fish. So I have no way to grill the fish except on a ridged pan, and I'm all concerned about the fish cooking. But if I had an outdoor facility, I would definitely try putting it on the grill. Anyway, so that's the famous Nobu recipe. So I bring home this sablefish. By the way, fillets that they were selling at Whole Foods weigh about a pound and a half, maybe a little more. It depends on. I always say, give me a small one. A pound and a half of fish is too much for the two of us. It's a very rich fish. If you remember from Sable, from the appetizing store, it really is an oily fish, but white. So Mr. Harned, who I cook for, does not eat salmon because it's too oily. Does not eat mackerel because it's too oily. However, he loved Sable, and I think it's the color. You don't realize how oily it is when the fish is as white as Sable is. By the way, the skin is dark gray or black, which is why it was called black cod. No relation at all to cod, though. So the flesh is very silky, has large flakes, and doesn't taste oily, but it tastes more buttery. And I, stupidly, I think, the first time I made it, I just put it in the oven. Actually, I had roasted some peppers, or red peppers, earlier in the day. And so I lined my little individual dishes with a red pepper. And then I put the cod on top of that. And that first piece of cod that I cooked was less than a pound, but it was plenty for the two. It was like, 0.85. And I put it on top of the pepper, and then I dotted it with butter, and then I put it in a 400-degree oven for 20 minutes, which seemed to be the perfect timing. I guessed, but it was perfect. This is a very hard fish to overcook, by the way, because it is so oily. It has actually more omega-3, what they call long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, which is what you need, you really want, than salmon, than even wild-caught salmon. By the way, apparently there is no such thing as black cod / sable fish farming. All of those fish are caught wild. Mostly they're coming from Alaska. This, of course, up there, there's also Canadian. And I understand, although I've never seen, that the Canadians market sable fish frozen, and it does appear in our supermarkets as a frozen fish. I've never seen it. And this is the first time I've actually noticed that the sable in the fresh fish market. By the way, Whole Foods is the best fish market we have in my part of Brooklyn. So it's worth going there. For me, it's worth going there just for fish. Anyway, so that was delicious. I have salt, pepper. We put a little squeeze of lemon on it when it came out of the oven. It was delicious, but I thought, you don't really need butter on this fish. That was sort of overkill. The butteriness made it an overkill of richness. Maybe that's why we ate so little of it, but not so little of it. So the next time I go to buy it, the fish clerk, I don't know what to call him. He's not a fishmonger. Anyway, nice young man. They're very well trained at Whole Foods. I don't know what I said to him that he said to me, oh, this is my favorite fish. And he's the fish guy. So I said, oh, do you ever make the Nobu recipe? He says, I don't. He was very matter-of-fact. He says, no, I don't. He said, every customer who buys this fish tells me about it, but I've yet to make it because this fish is so delicious just on its own, doing nothing to it, that's what I do, nothing. So I said, well, how do you do the nothing? He said, I just put a tiny bit of oil in a no-stick pan, and I cook it 4 minutes on the skin side and then 2 or 3 minutes on the flesh side, and depending on the thickness of the piece, it's done in 2 or 3 minutes on the second side. And you need the first 4 minutes to get the skin crisp. Now, my first attempt at this, the skin baked in the oven for 20 minutes at 400 degrees, the skin melted. I mean, you didn't know there was skin there. And, of course, it was on top of a beautiful roasted pepper. So this time, however, the skin did get crisp and crunchy when you ate it. And he told me. Now, the fillet, of course, you could picture a fish, it is at nearer the head it's a very thick fillet, and closest to where the tail was, or is the thinnest and narrowest part of the fillet. And the young man who was serving me said, Bob was standing next to me, he said, the only thing wrong with it is it's got bones. And I said, you know, Bob, they're only pin bones that you can easily pull out. And then I learned something from the fish guy. The tail end of the table fish has few to no pin bones. Only the thick end does. Now, when I got the fish home, I felt down the ridge of the fish, and sure enough, the pin bones closest to the thick end were substantial. And when I got about maybe half, two-thirds way down towards the tail, they stopped altogether. So Harnett, who usually gets every bone or whatever is you don't want to eat on something, he gets it. So he got no pin bones. I tried to pull out the pin bones before I cooked the fish, but it's not easy. You can't do it, really, without sort of mutilating the fish. So if you do, if you really are bothered by the bones, which, by the way, once the fish is cooked, they're easily pulled out. You don't have to pull them out of your mouth. You can, as you eat the fish, well, be aware that the pin bones only go down the central part of the fillet, and so everything pulls away. But really, they're very, very easy to pull out as you're eating the fish before you chomp into that particular bite. So that was perfect, by the way. But I thought, well, you know, I don't know. This needs something, right? I can't let it go just naked on the plate. So I made a little dressing of just lemon juice, finely chopped parsley, and really not very much oil. I did not want to overwhelm this fish with either fat or the flavor of extra virgin olive oil. So I used, I have one oil, I don't even know what to call it, oil dispenser, that where I've mixed my extra virgin with canola for a lighter taste. I did this some time ago for making mayonnaise because I don't like an overwhelming olive oil flavor in the mayonnaise. So I use half and half or some other oil. In any case, it really was good. So it took literally 7 minutes for the thick slices, 6 minutes for the tail and thinner slice, really quick dinner, easy cleanup, and I'm ready to make more sable fish. I actually may make this Nobu thing because it is the most famous recipe for this. By the way, on the Nobu menu, it is called black cod, not sable fish. And however, officially, government style, officially, it is called sable fish, and it is not supposed to be sold at retail under the name black cod, well, at least not since 1916. So I would keep an eye out for sable fish. I think you might hear more about sable fish because, oh, it's also for those who, you know, watch these things. It is a sustainable fish. There's more than enough sable fish to go around. Northern Pacific fishermen could use your business. And I don't know what else good to say about sable fish. Anyway, I also this week have done more exploration into the reverse sear, which I talked about last week. And I think I need to do an update report here. The update, because I've been, you know, I'm on this keto diet, which isn't making me totally happy at the moment, but that's another story. But I am, I must say, enjoying my steak, which I can freely have on keto. So I've been buying these really sensational rib steaks, boneless rib steaks at Whole Foods. They're cut an inch and a half to an inch and three quarters. They're obviously cut by hand. By the way, the butchers in the meat department at Whole Foods are also extremely well trained. I mean, they're really young. They take these kids out of high school or community college and make them into butchers, and they love it. I mean, you can tell by the joy they have in serving people. So they cut these steaks very thick, and you can tell they're hand cut because, in fact, I've been measuring my steaks, and they're not entirely even, so you know they're not done on a machine, which I like the idea of. Doesn't make a difference taste-wise. So they're an inch and a half, an inch and three-quarters. And the first one, as I reported last week, I put in a 250-degree oven, and it took over 40 minutes for the interior temperature to come up to 120, which is rare. But then you're going to sear it, so that brings the temperature up again. This week, I tried one in 300 degrees, and I pulled it out. It was mostly, I poked in more than one place with my instant read thermometer. I now have a new one, and it works well, I believe. And I pulled it out at 120 after 30 minutes at 300 degrees. Now, I think that's actually too much for my taste. If you like medium rare or more on the medium side, great. If you like medium rare or more on the rare side, I would take it out of the oven when it's at 215, not 220. And then I heat up my cast iron pan until it is, pun intended, searingly hot. And the steak should, sizzle the instant it hits the pan. And it only took about a minute and a half on each side to get a good sear, a good browning. I do feel the steak browns more faster after it's been cooked at the low temperature because you've already gotten some fat to the surface of this meat and juices, and they make a great crust as soon as the steak hits the pan on sear. And that's it. However, this was perfect medium rare. I would have liked mine, a tiny bit rarer. So, I don't know, next time maybe I'm only going to put it in 25 minutes at 300 degrees. I found and by the way, the end result here is different than a steak that you get at a steakhouse. The meat is extremely juicy because when you cook meat at low heat, it doesn't tighten up and push the juices out, to oversimplify. And you do get a more relaxed, tender texture, as well as increased juiciness. It's just not the same texture as a steak cooked at 800 degrees at a steakhouse, which is what I'm craving. But it's very good. And I must say, the whole reason for my even starting to do this was to decrease the amount of smoke created when I grill a steak in my kitchen that does not have an outside air duct. I have one of those recycling hoods, and I go through all this rigmarole so that it doesn't fill the house with smoke. But this has reduced the amount of smoke created when I cook a steak.
Now you take it right from, there's no resting, right? You take it right from when it's cooked.
Well, I like to let it rest before I cut it up.
No, but I mean before you sear it.
Yeah, it ends up, it gets like, no, you don't need to have it rested.
Okay.
In fact, you probably should not have it rested. Because what happens, the interior temperature does go up as the steak sits. So, no, you don't have to rest. Yeah. You can do it instantly. You can have the pan all ready for it as soon as it comes out of the oven. And it's probably the best. I think mine sat there for 30 seconds or so, maybe a minute, because I wasn't happy with the heat on my pan. So, yeah, it did sit. But, listen, you can't go wrong with this, because even if it is a little more cooked than you want, as was with mine, it was perfect for Bob Harnett. But for me, it was a little more than I wanted. It's still incredibly juicy and tender, so more juicy, I have to say, than a pan. These very thick steaks, I would normally do on top of the stove 2 or 3 minutes, more like 3 minutes per side in that pan, hot pan. And then I would put the pan in a 500-degree oven for about another 5 minutes. I didn't make myself hungry with that, steak report.
Sounds good. You know, I've got a wireless Bluetooth meat thermometer that is unbelievably great.
Wireless?
Wireless.
Meaning it goes in the oven, but it reports outside?
It reports to your phone via Bluetooth. And and it comes if...
See, but you are technologically adept.
What, this
whereas
is so simply,
I am not.
You don't even
fact,
have
I
to
could
be.
Probably call you with my phone problems. No. Like right now, the weather doesn't want to show me my weather beyond right now.
No, but it really is
on my phone.
And they give you like three or four. So like if you're cooking a turkey and you want to get the temperature,
oh, wow.
If you want to get the temperature where the leg joins, which is always people, it comes out pink when everything else is fine.
Well, I am so bad at these things. I bought this OXO instant read thermometer this week, and I can't figure out how to use it, even though there are clear instructions on the back. It took me several hours to realize that they had a plastic shield over the readout, the digital readout. And so that's why it always said 145 degrees, no matter what I did, until finally some light came on, and I said, oh, well, wait, now it's got a real temperature, but it's underneath 145 degrees. What's this about? And then I realized it was a piece of plastic.
That's 145 degrees.
So that's how bad I am.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, it's called a meter, and it's M-E-A-T-E-R, and it's the best thermometer I've had yet to talk.
All right. Well, I'll keep an eye out. My next technological difficulty is figuring out how to have my cable box hidden behind a door and still be able to work it. I'm told there's some kind of antenna gizmo I can attach to the cable box. But the chore here is getting Verizon on the phone.
Now, where do you put your cable box? Is it on like a
bookshelf? Well, right now it's on an open shelf underneath the TV. But in my kitchen, I'm not just talking about my kitchen TV. Okay. The other ones have other no issues. But here I want to put a door on this cabinet with open shelves. You know what? I love open shelves and looking at my stuff, but I don't like cleaning the shelves. And if you're in a kitchen that's used all the time, the shelves get really dirty. So I'm closing that cabinet, and that's the cabinet that has the cable box. But all the wires from the cable box come up through the back of the countertop. There's a nice hole there. So I have no problem putting something on the back of the cable box to receive my signal. And I'm told there is something. You know what that is?
No, but you should be able to close it off.
No, you can't. I've already masked it. And once, in other words, I put something in front of the cable box to test what happens, and what happens is nothing.
Well, your remote control won't work. That's right.
The remote control won't work.
But your remote control, there is no... I'm telling you right now that I don't think that there's anything... I think it's a scam. I don't think that there's anything that you can point your remote at other than that little thing on the cable box.
I understand. Yeah. But if that's the case, then I shouldn't have ordered a door for this. And I have no other place to put the cable box. But I think you're wrong, Marshall, because I've consulted a couple people on this.
Well, let me know how it works out.
They tell me that I may have to change cable boxes. So that's why I need to call Verizon. But apparently there is some way to do this that I don't have to have the cable box exposed.
All right.
You see, we're not under 30, even under 40, for that matter.
That's right. Or 50.
If you're under 40, you know about these things.
We're not even under 50. I'm sorry.
I'm not even under 70.
I'm not under 60. So there we go.
And by the way, I was taken to the head of the line when I went to get my vaccine because I'm my age, and it was the first time somebody ever deferred to me because I'm old. So it didn't make me feel elderly, though. Other things are making me feel elderly, but
not that.
But that was a nice experience, I have to say. Credits to Northwell Health, which is a huge health service, mainly on Long Island. And this place is in Bushwick and Brooklyn. I don't know how they got it, but it was extraordinarily well run. I wish everything was as well run as this vaccination center. I must say, since I was pushed to the front because I'm old, that when you walk in, they say, can you do stairs or not? And I said, why are you asking? Do we have to walk stairs? Is there an elevator? He said, no, but we have one section down here for those who don't want to walk stairs, and one section upstairs for people who don't care about stairs.
Wasn't that nice? Yeah, it is nice. That's a nice option.
Yeah.
All right, Arthur.
All right. Take care, everybody. Enjoy your sablefish. Keep an eye out for sablefish.
All right. We'll speak to you next week. Bye. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web, and, of course, streaming live at TuneIn.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.